Hi, I'm Nicola.
And I'm Jay Percy.
And welcome to the Afro-Animist podcast.
We are two animists and spiritual practitioners exploring the secular through the spiritual, discussing life experiences through a sacred lens.
Each week we share our experiences and dive deep into everything in life, from philosophy, metaphysics, Abhya, occultism, shamanism, culture, healing, nature, animism,
the arts, pop culture, conspiracies, psychedelics and witchcraft. Nothing is off the table in these discussions, which aim to get to the heart of what it means to be spiritual and Afro-diasporic in an increasingly sterile and authoritarian world.
We keep it real whilst exploring the biggest mysteries of our multiverse. Join us holding this space to laugh, cry, debate, build community and tear down oppressive structures.
This week on the Afro-Animist podcast, we're going to be talking about something that's a bit triggering. We're going to be talking about relationships to food and body image. So if you feel you're in a place where this is going to be too heavy for you this week, perhaps revisit us eventually when you're in a place where this is a little easier for you and you're in a place to integrate. Thank you so much. Welcome, 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 beautiful, beautiful beings of the multiverse to another episode of the Afro-Animist podcast. I am Love.
And I am Nikki. And we're really trying hard to get this one recorded, like, seriously. I might have to leave the outtakes in there, Love, because it's just ridiculous. No, everything's in retrograde right now.
Shove it at
don't
the end.
Don't do anything.
Shove it at the end. Listen, if you hang on to the end, you'll be able to...
Then you'll witness even more chaos.
Yeah. Embrace the chaos. Embrace the...
Why do I feel so much like you're talking about me when you say that?
Are you chaos?
No comment.
Nikki Chaos. I think that...
That would be my superhero name.
It sounds like a supervillain, but I don't think you're a villain.
I would be a supervillain. Superheroes are fucking boring, man. Who wants to save the day when you could, like, have all the power?
Fuck shit up.
Fuck shit up.
So...
Sorry.
we're trying really hard today, guys. And this is a very special episode because this, I think, marks the first in an attempt to, like, film everything in person, actually
together.
Seeing. Yeah.
Well, we tried once before, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it created a lot of technical issues for me, man. I just don't really know how to, you know. I'm trying to edit. I did not know what I was doing. And it was, we were sitting in the room, but we were opposite each other like that. And we had the mics up and they were, anyway. I know you guys aren't interested in this.
They might be.
The magic of technology.
The magic of technology. So we've already had quite a big chat about what we wanted to talk about today. Mm. So I'm feeling a lot more positive. And this is actually a re-record. This is going to be a re-record of an episode that we've done talking about food.
Yes.
Anything to say on that?
Yes. Sorry, it's because I already just said this. I forgot to hit record. Anyway. We did try, we recorded this already a few days ago, and I just, when I was looking over the edit, I was like, man, I felt like I sounded very preachy and inauthentic, and you know, and I don't feel like the reality of my experience with food really came across, and I just, one of the things that I love about us and about the way we share is that we share from a very authentic place, like, we talk about our real experience, and we don't try and bullshit. So, especially with food, it's such a big subject for everybody. Yeah. I felt like we could do better.
yeah. And in that same vein, there's a lack of authenticity because there is this sort of like, on my part at least, a holding back about certain realities. And I think we should come at it from a more authentic way. Of course, you're here for the spiritual stuff, and we're always going to layer that on top and talk about how it affects us spiritually. Mm. But there still should always be a level of, you know, trueness about what we're saying. So that's what we're looking to bring today. We're looking to bring the true.
100%. Well, for me, connecting spirit is authentic. It's the most authentic thing you can do. So, and we've spoken about this before. Like, we do these subjects that aren't necessarily so obviously like, oh, that's magical or witchcrafty or like shamanic or whatever. But every single, that's our tag, isn't it? Every single thing in life is connected. Like, and food is one of the most important things.
Yeah.
And is one of the things that I think, one of the biggest things people struggle with. from on across the whole spectrum of potential issues, like
it can be this source of addiction on either end of the spectrum, like this addiction away from it, like control of it in your life, or this sort of feeling controlled by it. And you know, I've gone through either ends of the spectrum. I've seen friends like battle with either ends of the spectrum. If you're a millennial, you grew up with like Cosmo and Vogue and these sort of magazines telling you that you needed to look a really specific way and eat a really specific way and sort of be this performative woman to be accepted in society. And it just ingrains into your psyche. And if you're a teenager during these times, during the years you should be learning from your society about how to thrive, you just don't. You don't learn how to thrive. You learn how to fit in and squash yourself into certain molds. And you know, whatever end of the spectrum you are there, if you don't fit in a certain way, it becomes really a really terrible experience for you. Yeah, sort of that experience. It's really differed. It's really differed, but it's been quite big for me. It's been a lot to contend with at points. And you were telling me earlier, it's been quite a contention for you as well.
100%. Like, I think a lot in the first episode we recorded about it, I was talking a lot about being an athlete and about having food as fuel and being good at that and and there have been aspects of my life when I have been really good at that. I don't necessarily think food as fuel is always the most healthy way to think about it, because food is more than fuel. It is actually, there is pleasure involved in it. I think
it's community connection,
everything like but I also do, I really struggle with my eating habits, like, and especially in more recent years, I do, and I struggle with my weight and all of these things, and really notice like the effect. Like, you guys will know when I haven't eaten, right? Because those are the episodes when I'm like, what did I just say? What are you talking about? Where is that? But I just think it's really important, because like, even what we were saying, like, so I'm having, I hope you don't mind me saying, like, I'm having an issue with maintaining my, like, keep putting weight on. And you're having the opposite issue. And so it's then interesting to come together and speak about it and understand like how we're both affected by essentially the same thing, but it manifests in different ways in our lives.
I think we both came to the conclusion earlier that for both of us, that stress is a huge part of it. And weaning. In our early years is a massive part of it, and this idea of nurturing in our early years, these things seem to be really common between the three of us. Two of us,
including JJ. No, he was nurtured. Well,
where's the other person in the room? Are they here now?
Okay. this place was built like 200 years ago. There's probably a few people hanging about.
It's just a guy here wanted to jump in. But yeah, tell me a bit more about that, you don't mind, like, what's your experience with,
well, with food and my journey with food? Well, I feel like, you know, the more I think about it, it has been a, obviously, like, for everyone, a really important thing in my life. But I've gone through different journeys with it. Like, I feel like I was quite lucky, you know, when I was growing up, because of my mum, if I'm honest, because she was an athlete. So she was an athlete, and then I was an athlete, which meant that the way that I thought about food was specific. It was specifically geared towards my training and me being healthy and having energy. And that's kind of how she was. But then she also does have some issues with food. And I think it's sometimes less about the food and more about the process around food and the thinking about it. I mean, everyone has this thing. It's like the worst question. You come home in the evening, what are you going to watch on Netflix? What are you going to eat? Oh my God. Like, those, it's just like, you know, so it's just this, that. But anyway, so I grew up training, eating well, but then I did gymnastics, like rhythmic gymnastics, and you know, girls were on diet pills there. Again, I was lucky because my mum was very much like, your body is beautiful and strong, you know, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to be strong. I thought the most beautiful I could be was being the strongest and most superhuman feeling in my body. And that's what I used to seek when I was training. Like, and that meant that when I was a teenage girl, like when I was going through that time when most, when a lot of women, or a lot of people full stop, are having that like identity crisis where you're going, what do I look like? I want to look like that person. I don't look like so-and-so. And I definitely had that, being mixed race, like all of those. And also being athletic and not being like sexy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But those things didn't matter to me until I was old enough to, you know, start wanting to get them in.
Yeah.
So I didn't have issues with the way I looked like that when I was a teenager about my weight. Mm-hmm. But when I became an adult, I started to get more problems. So I got IBS, you know, I've spoken about my fibromyalgia before and things like that, which made it just a lot more difficult to eat. Mm-hmm. Full stop.
Yeah.
And I then, yeah, I wasn't training in the same way. My body changed a lot. It's also because, you know, you don't finish maturing until you're in your mid-20s, really.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So my body changed. I was like, I had on, I would say it was my puppy fat, do you know what I mean? So just that extra layer of weight on top of my muscles.
Yeah.
And when I was like, it was almost like the day I turned 19, it just fell off of me. And it just, I just got thin.
Yeah.
And it just didn't really make any sense to me why that was happening. Mm. And then when I came with the pill, my boobs went. So then it just became this thing like of getting thinner and thinner. When I was a teenager, I did have an issue with being thin. I said this to you earlier. Both my mum and dad are very thin and they had issues with being too skinny.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling embarrassed about it. And I had the same thing. Like, I wouldn't wear skirts. Like, I would only wear like jogging pants. Mm. And like, you know, things that where you couldn't see how thin I was.
Mm.
So I guess maybe that's also why I don't think about it sometimes in the same way. Like, I don't give myself the grace of actually having had issues with it, because like we said earlier, sometimes if you're thin and if you struggle with being too thin, people are just like, what's the problem?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
but like, for me,
you don't have a real problem.
Yeah, but for me it's like, I know what it feels like to be strong, to be powerful in my body. And so I know when my weight drops underneath a certain amount, it's because I'm stressed out, my brain doesn't work properly, my body doesn't work properly. Like, I just don't have the energy. I'm skinny. Everyone says to you, oh, you're skinny. Oh, you're looking really thin. And that, like, there's been times in the last few years where I feel like I've put on weight and I felt great in my body. And I've been like, boobs are back. Like, I'm looking good. The pee head's gone. Like, all of that stuff. Yeah. And then someone will turn around and be like, oh, you're looking really thin. And it literally crushes my soul. Oh. And I go home and cry about it.
Oh, babe.
I know. Boo-hoo.
No, don't push it off like that. Like, I think some of the biggest problems we have in society is the fact that these sort of like these experiences aren't acknowledged.
Mm.
I think the first time I became aware that these sort of the issues around thinness weren't really being acknowledged, I think it was the early days of like Facebook, where there are these memes going around going, oh, real men want meat, only dogs want a bone.
Yeah.
And knowing friends who were like very, very lean or very, very thin, some of them had anorexia problems. Mm. I just thought that can't be nice for them to be sort of seeing these things circulate around friendship groups.
Yeah.
Knowing that they have like eating disorders. And do you know, at the time, I say they had eating disorders. At the time, I didn't consider myself having an eating disorder.
Mm.
In retrospect, I absolutely did have eating disorders. Right. Like, it's something I'm still, like, dealing with to this day. But, you know, seeing that in them and then seeing those memes, it just looked really cruel. Or there would be friends who would just take care of themselves and would eat.
Mm.
But, you know, they're naturally quite lean, quite thin, and they'll just be like, oh, you don't have any real problems, you know. That there would still be like boys saying, oh, you're not a real woman, or oh, you look like a bloke, and those really horrible disparaging comments.
I've been told that. Really? I think I said to you, yeah, actually it's a really fucking horrible story.
Okay. You don't have to share.
Do you want to hear, guys?
Oh.
I love the way you're just like, as soon as I do a Nikki thing, you're just like, for fuck's sake. What, again?
I love you, as you are. You don't change.
No, so I was sexually assaulted by a guru If you're not watching some video, you'll see I'm doing the air quotes. Guru, guru.
Yeah. Just a dickhead who puts himself in a position of power and calls himself a...
I mean, he'd done some work for sure, but he was a... And he told me that. So the first time I went to his house, like the grooming started by, you know, I'd just broken up with my first boyfriend. I was heavily into my martial arts. I actually had a fucking amazing figure, like, because I did have my boobs and my bum back then, tiny waist. I was strong as fuck. I could fly. I looked amazing. I could fucking fly. and I went to his house and I was being introduced to him, and it was like this, the weirdest thing where it isn't weird now. I understand how cults work and how grooming works, but
was it negging?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, I kind of was brought into this house and there was all the women in the house. And then like, I was like, this is fucking weird. Why are all these women in this house cooking and cleaning for this old man? Anyway, the people I was with were very encouraged. They were very much like, you know, you need to go meet, don't be all uptight, Nikki. Like, you need to just go meet the fucking guru. So I went to, you know, he's at the back of his garden in Kilburn at like 10 o'clock in the night. I'm like, why are you not in your house? Why do I have to go and, what? So walked down to the back of the garden, and the first conversation he has with me is like, you know, he just finds out information. So he finds out that I've just broken up with my first boyfriend. I'm like 20 years old. He's found out that I'm a martial artist and I love Wing Chun, because he was speaking about that stuff.
Yeah.
So then I'm saying, yeah, like, I do martial arts. And he just was like, you need to stop training. You need to stop doing martial arts because you look like a man.
What?
And that affected me so much. Like, I can't even, because I had just broken up with my first boyfriend.
Yeah.
I was feeling incredibly insecure in myself.
Of course.
I was, you know, 20. I feel like, you know, for me, that's when I was really starting to discover, figure out, like, about being a woman and... Yeah. Stepping more into my femininity. So to have this man, this guru, this person in a position of authority and power turn around to me and tell me that I look like a man, I need to stop doing martial arts because I look like a man. Now when I think back on that, I'm like, wow, it's such a crazy thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually, and it is just, it was just an attack, like, to break me down.
When you're that vulnerable, when you're that young, you're you are more manipulable. You can be, which is why, you know, I think we're seeing more of a culture now where people are saying, girl, if that guy is like 10 years older than you when you are like 16 years old, like, run. He doesn't think you're mature. He just sees a child too. He can take advantage of.
Yeah.
Going back to the word negging, if you're not familiar with it, it's this idea of specifically telling people or telling someone like abusive things with the hopes of bringing them into your, like, whether you're looking to date them or bring them into your cult. So you specifically point out things and like exacerbate these negative traits to make them feel insecure.
Isn't this what the game is? Do you know the game?
No.
Oh, okay. So I think back before, like, because obviously now we're all like, we're so good with all these terms, like stonewalling and ghosting and negging and whatever. I don't really know what most of them mean, but like, back in the, oh god, what was I going to say? So I didn't have any food yet today. What the fuck was I just talking
about? The game. What is
the game? Okay, all right. Yeah. So like, okay, back in the like noughties, this is what guys were doing. This is what young guys were doing. Right. So it was like, there was this man who figured out this thing called the game. He was like, you know, an insecure man who had couldn't have sex with women. And so it's, I feel like it's the beginning of the incel movement. It's the
beginning of Andrew Tate, I'm sure.
It was the beginning of fucking, no, essentially, like, there's an element of what he talks about that is that. But it's like, it is literally based on that. It's like, there are certain rules. Like, if you speak to someone that you know, if you speak to a woman, your man, you speak to a woman about sex, like, so they'll come up to you and they'll start having very specific conversations. So they'll mention something about sex, because then if you respond with an open mind, then they're like, okay, she's someone I could fuck. That's one of the rules.
Okay.
Which is bullshit, because actually, like, in not in any funny way, but I can literally talk about anything with anyone and not feel any way. Like, it doesn't mean I'm gonna want to jump into bed with you. Of course, that's one of those rules. And then another rule was like, you know, basically, in order to, it's just about manipulating women into bed with you. So you pick the woman that you find the most attractive, most beautiful, and you tell her something shit about herself.
Yeah.
And this is,
or you speak directly to her friend to and friend, ignore her,
exactly,
and only give her negative comments.
We've all been through it, like, and they still, you know, it's still a thing now. But yeah, like, I feel like that's negging. I think is what that is, right?
Yeah, but they'll do it in cult situations. They'll point out the fact that, oh, you know, you think this is a problem with yourself, well, this is a huge problem with yourself, and you should feel shame about it, and, you know, you as a woman who's just broken up with your boyfriend, that's probably a point where you would feel like the less womanly, like least womanly.
100%.
So let's pick on that. Let's tell her something that's going to feel make her feel not like a woman even more, which is going to bring her into my circles. And it's like a trap.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. It's just it's like break. There's a, you know, all right, don't do this, guys, but there are just very easy, specific ways to break a human down, and that's how you do it. Like, you just tell them that they're wrong over and over and over, and then tell them what is right, and that's it. You got them.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Marketing 101.
Marketing 101. Here you go. Oh my gosh, did you watch this on... Sorry, a bit of a change, not a change subject. Kind
tangent.
Of.
Tangent.
Did you watch this? Because I was just going to say something and I thought, fuck, I watched the show called that. How to Become a Cult Leader or How to Make a Cult on Netflix.
I started watching it, but I couldn't. It made me so angry. Yeah.
Because they're taking something that is serious and fucks so many people up. And they're making a joke out of it. And it was literally like, hey, this is how Manson did this. And this is how so-and-so did this. And I'm what are you teaching people?
It didn't feel like it was paying respect to the victims. That's why I turned it off.
But it's just, it's just wrong. It's just like, why would you name a show and then go, this is how all these evil people fucked other people up. There you go. Here's how to do it. I mean, I know I just said how to do it. But you know what I'm talking about.
Context, guys. It's context. Context is everything. So this guy broke you down and basically... just exacerbated your issues with food at the time.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't you know specifically to do with food, but actually food was, it's so funny you say that because I never thought about it. There was something that got me in that is the roles that people played. So he had this house, he was basically, okay, so guys, he was an Osho devotee. So if you know,
oh my god,
yeah, so obviously like there's still a debate out about it and I'm just like, no fucking way. Like, it's these people are abusers, right? So he lived in some big house in Kilburn. Now, if you know London, right? Like, Kilburn is the nicest area, but it's like southeast. One side of the road is poor people houses. One side of the road is multimillionaire houses. He was living in the multimillionaire house. There were three or four Bentleys in the drive.
Wow.
Of course, he was following his teacher. and then the house was full of women, just young women. And every woman I spoke to was like, I was... like basically the worst things that could happen in regards to abuse that someone could go through in their life. All of them had had the most, the darkest stories, and they'd come from all over the world and they were living in the house and they would just do all the work in the house, cook, clean, da-da-da. And then he had a group of men.
Okay.
Who were basically, he groomed to be rapists. And so then there was this divide that there is in a lot of these situations where the women are with women and the men are with the men. So I would go round to this house and I would be then sent off to the supermarket and we'd then be going around and we'd be getting all the food and we'd be like then cooking all this food for the men and like it just was like, it's interesting. I'll have to think on that more because I've never directly linked him to food apart from that thing where he told me that I look like a man, but that was more less about food and more about the things that I love to do. So it was more about me loving to train. But it's interesting just how the whole grooming thing works and how the places were so massively designed and I was pushed into those things when we all know that I'm not the one who cooks. Like, that's just not what it's going to be like. Don't ask me to do that. Oh shit, that soup's gonna burn.
Pause it. Do you want to take it off the stove?
No, it's fine. I did turn it down. Soup.
But yeah, it's just this idea of, I mean, putting someone in this like father head figure, it relates back to this idea of nurturing, right? Which is one of the things that we also pointed to having links to food. This idea of food is directly linked to our idea of nurturing, because the first things that we need when we're born is like food and some warm arms to be in. You know, babies get very sick or die very quickly if they're never held. And of course you're gonna die if you don't eat any food. If you have these situations where perhaps you're not given the food that you need to thrive, or you're weaned in weird ways, this can affect your relationship to nurture later on in life. Or if you perhaps don't have a nurturing parent, whatever parent that is, then you're going to inadvertently come across that theme later on in your life. And you know, really, until you can spot the issue and find a way to resolve it. And you know, some of us have so many issues that we never spot the source of it, so we never quite resolve it. And some people really do take advantage of that. So that's why I asked about this relationship to food, this relationship to nurture, this almost sort of like father figure. I say this in air quotes because he's like obviously a dickhead and not a proper father.
But it was that. Yeah. Mad thing. I'm gonna have to think about this.
Do.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to think about that. Jeez, oh my lord.
Take it away, because you know, like when you talk about it, where does it exist for you? And you're like,
what, the food thing or him?
Him, like
just,
over there.
Yeah, just far away. I've done so much work around that stuff. That is why I can sit here and like
be open about it.
Yeah. And also be a little bit lighthearted about it. It's like obviously the least lighthearted thing, but like I've done a lot of work on that, because that was one of the worst things that ever happened to me in my life. And I wouldn't have got to here if I hadn't have had to. But what I really want to ask you is basically, I feel like you should retell the story about meeting grandmother and what she's taught you, because like just I know it's just such an amazing thing.
Right. So I've done some work very recently with ayahuasca, out of the country, obviously. It's all legal.
It's allowed
when you're not in this country.
We are very good girls.
We make sure that we are doing things in appropriate sets and settings. So I've gone away to work with ayahuasca, and in the very first setting, I've felt it very quickly move through my system. So I sort of felt it come down my left arm, and it's like, yep, yeah, I'm in. And it started talking to me about trauma. So I've of course said like, I need help with some of this trauma. And it's sort of replied back to me, you know, you're not here just to focus on trauma. That's not why you're here in life. That's not why you're here today with me. We're gonna run through this really, really quickly. These are the sort of the big points that we need to get you through, so that you can go away, and then we're going to show you all the joyous stuff. If you want to hear about all the joyous stuff, then this season, the first episode, you might want to hear that. I talk a bit about that. But she said to me specifically that I was weaned incorrectly when I was a small child, and this was a massive trauma for me. This was a huge trauma for me. And I sort of had an inkling of what she was talking about, but then she of course showed me quite clearly. My mum would tell this story, which she quite lightheartedly tells me, you know, oh, you only ever wanted the boob, you didn't want anything else. We tried to give you formula, it was a big no, but it started to get to a point where you'd be like trying to whip my boobs out in public and it just became a problem. So we needed to wean you. And you just weren't taking any food. So one day what I did is I set out a load of food on your little toddler table, and I just refused to feed you for the day, and you could have any of the food that you wanted.
So she didn't like wean you properly, as in like try you with foods and things like that?
I think she did occasionally try some foods, but I just wasn't taking it. So it was just full breast milk. And then one day she set out all of these foods, and she'd refused to feed me any breast milk for the entire day. And apparently I was sort of crying, fussing, making noise, screaming throughout the day, just generally, you know, toddler tantrum behavior, until at the end of the day, which I think she says to me, oh, about 5 o'clock, then I've gone and started like quite sadly, like crying while eating the little bits of food. And ayahuasca had pointed that to me and said, that was really traumatic for you. I don't think you realise. She tells this as like a little lighthearted story because perhaps she doesn't know any better. But this was a real, real big trauma for you in your relationship to food. I was like, oh, okay. And then it said, not too long after that, you know, your dad had microwaved you some rice and you'd eaten this and you'd gone unconscious. And, you know, my parents tell me this, they didn't realize that giving a baby rice, microwave rice, could make them really sick. But ayahuasca said to me, you know, you didn't just go unconscious, you almost died. You almost died. I said, no, there's no way. She's like, no, I'm telling you, this was a near-death experience for you. They got you to the hospital in time, so you were okay. But that was also really traumatizing on your little baby body. And it sort of pointed me towards like these experiences, they really affected your relationship with food. And what we need you to do is work on reweaning yourself. You need raw milk and you need to be drinking this regularly to get your body used to that sort of layer, that as a bridge, like you're drinking this while eating bits of other foods to get used to food again. Mm. And that was a really massive revelation for me, because I have had problems with food in my life. And I don't think it was just that, you know, my grandmother, she was very, very abusive. And she was absolutely lovely to my little brother, because she's one of these Caribbean women that thinks like boys are princes and girls are dirt. And she treated me as such. So there'd be times where I'd say, oh, I'm hungry, can I get something to eat? Oh, no, you can't have any food. So I wouldn't be fed, or I'd have to wait hours until dinner to be eaten. I remember one time I said, oh, I'm hungry. She got very angry. She used to have those little cheap mini croissants back in the day, tiny little ones. Yeah. You don't see those anymore. What she did is she tore one open with her hands and then put her hand in the butter, wiped it on the croissant and threw it on the floor. Go eat it like a dog. And
what?
Yeah. It was really, I feel my heart now. It was really horrible. And I remember that day, obviously not wanting to be off the floor, but I think I was about four or five, and I just remember writing lines that day. I wish I was dead, I wish I was dead, I wish I was dead, I wish I was dead. So, and she saw it and she laughed. She's like, oh, you wanting to be dead, what do you want to be dead for? You've got a good life. It's just these formative experiences with food. They're just so upsetting, so upsetting, so formative. They form you, right?
Of course they do.
They create who you are and your relationships to these things. So going into my teenage years, you know, I'm obviously mixed race, you know, there's a certain body shape that can come with being, you know, part African diasporic. I wasn't by any means like that, but you know, when you're eating your rice and peas, you know, there's gonna be a little bit of a different shape to you. But at school, a lot of my friends, I had a lot of friends who, you know, were white English, and they were quite naturally very, very lean, very small things, you know, very blonde, very pretty, very crushed upon in school. Everyone sort of thought they were beautiful and loved them. And then there was me, who was slightly like differently shaped, let's say that. So I started to get into habits of, you know, really limiting my food. So for breakfast, it would be like a banana or half a banana on a really like the most minuscule amount of porridge possible. Lunch would be just two rice cakes with some peanut butter on it. Then I'd come home for dinner, and I wasn't necessarily eating the right amount for dinner there too. For, you know, a girl who would do dance lessons, or, you know, you've had a long day of PE at school and or activity, just come home and eat minuscule amounts. And then I'd over-exercise. You know, I had one of those stepper machines at home, so I just spent very long amounts of time on that. And I don't feel I was necessarily getting any thinner, any leaner, any healthier, because obviously, you know, I was probably the right size for me at that point in time. And my mum, she's always been like that. She's always had like diet, she's always had an exercise machine. There's always been like a fatty exercise machine. There's always been diet pills. There's always been diet teas in the house. So I'd be doing all of this, and then I'd start taking like diet pills and diet teas. So that's a form of bulimia. So anything I ate, I made sure I'd flushed out of my system entirely, because I couldn't have it there. And I did this probably from about the age of 14 or 15 right up until about the age of 23 or 24. I'd always have a diet tea in my house, and I think up until my early 20s, there was a point where I was only eating like 800 calories a day. I would make sure I net 800 calories a day. And if I, you know, went over, or if I like near approached it, instead of like, oh, today's a good day, I hit 700 calories. If it was like an 800 calorie day, it'd be like, oh, I'll take some diet tea and I'll flush out my system. And I just didn't quite understand why I wasn't looking like the women in the magazines, why I wasn't looking like some of my friends who were like really, really lean. Even though I was, you know, gymming 6 days a week and then doing yoga three, four days a week. Barely any rest time, barely any downtime. And I just wasn't thin enough. And I would keep up those behaviors. And it's led me to, it's done a real disservice. It's done a real disservice. Now where I'm making sure I'm eating sensibly, like my 1800 calories a day, for someone who I'm not as active as I used to be. I'm not very active right now, because of chronic pain, because of chronic fatigue. Now that I'm eating sensibly, it's just like you've gone from eating 800 calories a day and then flushing it out with laxatives, so barely anything a day, to a normal amount, but my body isn't obviously responding to that like it's a normal amount right now. And with the PCOS and endometriosis, it's like a concerted effort to look after myself. I am at a point with myself now where I do love my body enough that I should be putting, I am putting what's needed into my body in terms of food, in terms of exercise. But it's a daily process because, you know, I still come up and contend with certain problems if I am having like a really sad day.
Yeah.
If I am having a really sad day, then if I'm being unconscious about it, I will just go out and buy something really sweet and that will cheer me up for a bit. But then you realize it's like, oh wow, I just stuffed a problem down. I just ate food to stuff a problem down instead of dealing with the problem. And it's been a real roller coaster having that experience with food throughout my life. But now that I'm on this like spiritual path, I do sort of have a feeling and understanding that I should be, you know, balancing the feminine and masculine within me by eating and consuming certain things, by looking after myself in a certain way. And it's important because I'm sorry, I keep coughing.
That's okay. Do you want some water?
No, that's okay. I think it comes with like speaking your truth, right?
It's... Yeah. Stop coming out. No, it's gonna
come out. Yeah, stop. You've said too much. No, I am being a lot more mindful and making sure it is aligning with my spirituality, what I know about ourselves as divine human beings. We should be treating ourselves with some kindness and respect.
100%. I think that's why this is an important episode to make, and we're not sitting here going, okay, this is how you magically are going to be at the right weight that you really want, or, you know, how you
how to manifest the thinner body.
We should maybe offer some kind of energetics or spell work in regards to like enhancing your food nutrition. There are things like that. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I feel like, and I said this to you earlier as well, like, this is a self-worth issue. Like,
yeah,
when we talk about all of these things, it comes from abuse. It isn't just that you weren't shown the right way.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that food being laid out on the table, that food being thrown on the floor, you not being guided to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's an abuse.
Mm.
Whereas actually there was just instruction that was needed. Do you know what I mean? I think that's it. It's like so many of us, our relationships to around food have been abusive or have come from places where we
are neglectful. Mm-hmm.
And so therefore it becomes this ingrained self-worth issue. I feel like that for me on a day to day. Like, I will literally wake up in the morning and I'll be like, just eat, like I told you, my standard millennial breakfast: eggs, avocado, sourdough bread. Can't go wrong. Protein, something green in it. It's good. It's going to give you that slow release energy. Yeah. Right. And I struggle to do that, to just give myself that that thing. And I recognize it when I'm the worse I'm feeling, the less likely I am to take care of myself. And it isn't because I can't be bothered or because I'm lazy or even because I'm procrastinating. It's because I don't feel like I deserve it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's what it is. I'll look after my fucking dog. My dog is so healthy. Like, everybody who meets me is like, oh my God, he's got such an amazing coat. He's so muscly. He's perfect. Because he I really fucking look after him so well. And like, because I can see it and I go, this is what he needs. And I love him. You know, it's just that simple. But I love him.
Why don't you give that to yourself?
Why am I not giving it to myself? You know, and it is, yeah, I just think these things are so more important in a sense to look at than like what your spiritual practice is. Because if you, one of my gurus would say to me that if you can't clean your own toilet, don't try and clean anyone else's toilet. And what she kind of meant by that was like, you know, there's all these people who are going out in the world and going like, this is how you should be and this is how you should do it. But actually, if you go to their toilet, it's covered in shit. They haven't been able to figure out how to look after that thing for themselves, that basic thing. And it's just been something that's always stuck with me, because for me, spirit connection comes through essentially ritual, daily rituals that I do every single day. We've spoken about before, brushing my teeth can be a ritual, cooking my food can be the most beautiful ritual if I am able to allow myself that space. I mean, even when I say that, I feel like it's a bit too hard on myself, if I'm honest, but like, though, you know, it is about kind of finding that and knowing when you're not loving yourself. And I'm super aware that is me really not loving myself.
Why do you think you withhold food when you're not feeling that self-love?
I think it starts like on a physical, I don't know if that's true. I basically, when I get really stressed out, my stomach just almost like disappears. Like I can be starving, hungry till I'm gonna be to like feeling sick, but I couldn't eat. It's like the stress has just made my body go, you know, it's just like,
yeah,
and I can't put anything in it.
I feel constricted.
And then there's something else on top of that. Like if I'm really stressed, and I've spoken about my depression before, it isn't just stress for me. It's serious depression actually. And if I am depressed, then there are certain things that I just cannot do. Like the journey of making food is too hard for me, you know? So like I'll wake up, I'm sad, for me to sit up, it's hard. So if I manage to sit up, that's a win. Am I gonna be able to cut a piece of bread and put it in the toaster? That's a lot of work, you know? And it sometimes is like that. Which again comes down to like how I'm feeling about myself, but also then the knock-on effect of not being able to take care of my basic needs like food means that I feel worse,
of course.
So, and then you get into that whole headspace of like, oh my God, like I'm doing and that's also why I wanted to re-record this, because I didn't want anybody to feel like we were saying that you need to be able to fucking figure this out today.
No.
Like we're just discussing something
where we are on our journey.
I literally don't have I don't know a single person that doesn't have some kind of issue around food.
Yeah, even if they're spiritual.
Especially if they're fucking spiritual. These people, man, we have the worst problems at all. Well, we're too busy thinking about the shadow to think about dinner.
Well, of course. And do you know what? I think this episode was originally entitled Why I'm No Longer Vegan.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I'm no longer vegan. You know, at the time, being vegan, I'd gone because I had watched Cowspiracy Before the Floods, Forks Over Knives, Earthling, all of those like vegan brainwashing documentaries. I'd watched all of them and was like, right, bear in mind I'm doing this while having like severe eating disorder issues, and like the laxative teas, and you know, having 800 calories a day. Like I'm vegan now. I'm going to go vegan and I'm going to find a way to make this work for me. And I did that. And for the first couple of years, I felt great. And then I didn't feel so great. So there are all kinds of vegan thinkers in this field of how to eat like a clean vegan. And people have different opinions, you know, whole food vegan, raw vegan, juice vegans. Everyone has a different opinion of what you need to do for your body. Mm-hmm. So I started following these things. And I was just, I chose the sort of whole food, you know, lots of legumes, lots of grains, you know, adding in some juices, all of that stuff that seems really good on the outside. And I just started feeling worse and worse and worse. And it got to my wedding. sorry, backing up a little bit, and I'd worked with mushrooms at the time, and at the time, you know, I was able to meet with Mahakali, and she'd said to me quite explicitly, like, we're able to let you through because you've done all of this, and we were able to show you because, you know, your body is in a place where we're able to show you these things. And I'd sort of taken that as some sort of like gospel of this is how you need to be all of the time in order to meet the divine. But after doing the ayahuasca, where they put you on a very specific diet for like a month, I'm very, very aware that these diets or these dietas, they are specifically in the run-up to these ceremonies. Yeah. They're not necessarily things you're supposed to be doing for like years at a time.
You couldn't maintain that. Like, okay, there are ayahuasqueros who are pretty much like semi-constantly on dieta, but then they live in the Amazon forest and they are drinking ayahuasca every weekend. Yes. Like, it's a different thing, okay?
And the food they're eating they're is not, nutritious.
That's what I'm saying. They're, it's literally grown the, from the their yucca, fucking back garden.
The yucca root is properly, like, yeah.
Like, whereas, like, we're getting on a tube, man. You're literally moving through the densest, like,
energies.
Like, what, do you think you're going to be able to do that without any seasoning on your food? No, we need the seasoning.
Like, we need the seasoning. We need actual, like, foods that help to nourish the body. So after working with ayahuasca this time, it's sort of very clear to me that, you know, these dietas, and this dieta for ayahuasca was very, very strict. Oh my god, the strictest. So it, days in the run-up to, no eggs, no cheeses, no seasonings. Like, a month before, it's like no seasonings, no salt, no sugar.
They didn't let you have cinnamon.
No,
they didn't even let you have cinnamon. That's bad mind, man. Like, you can have some cinnamon. Like, seriously, just put it on the yam. It does make a difference. Like,
it was literally, I was eating for a month, it was just boiled potatoes, quinoa. I was eating like corn, no butter. Normally I'm putting butter on my corn, normally I'm putting a little bit of like seasoning on my corn, no seasoning on my corn. Yeah, that would be a typical dinner: sweet potato, quinoa, corn. But you know what? Going back to this being vegan at the time, I was vegan for 5 whole years. And towards the end of it, just my body was just giving out. I was just sore the whole time. I'm still between a place like, was it the IUD? Was it the veganism? Was it a combination of both? Because I still believe you're not supposed to have an IUD. You're not supposed to be... This isn't medical advice. I don't feel you should have anything sat in your body that you have not symbiotically involved with. I don't think that's a stupid comment. I think that's a pretty fair comment.
Leave your thoughts down below, guys.
Yeah. if you were meant to be having these things and blocking off your natural processes, then we would have, you know, we'd be doing... I think all of this should be plant-based anyway, but that's a whole different story.
I mean,
story.
We can plant-base it. We maybe should do an episode on plant-based contraceptives. Will we get sued if we do that?
Oh, I think we'll get sued. And honestly, it's territory that
I'm telling you, they work. I'm 35, I don't have many babies.
I think that's one of those topics that people need to think... They need to think what's responsible for them individually.
100%.
Because everybody is different. Everyone's lifestyle is different.
But if you want to do some research, go on sisterzeus.com.
Oh my god.
Sorry. I can't help
Not that. A contraceptives episode. But I will say, contraceptives have contributed to fucking up my body and my body image, like, hugely. You know, when you go into doctors and you're saying, like, this has put on weight on certain areas to me. Like, my arm suddenly got huge after... implant.
The implant thing.
My arms blew up, and they're like, they're like, no, it's in your head. Like, gaslighters of notes, these people. But we're not talking about contraceptives today. We'll talk about it another episode. But between the IUD and then the veganism, like, I had the sciatica, and then I suddenly started gaining like 2 pounds, 1 to 2 pounds every day I stepped on the scale in the run up to my wedding. By the way, guys, I was eating whole food, clean, vegan, monitoring my calories. Next thing I know, I'm just chunking out. So I've gone to one fitting, I fit into my dress. I go to the next fitting 6 weeks later, I can't fit in my dress. I've got these sudden stretch marks from absolutely nowhere. I'm putting on weight on my stomach, where I've never, you know, when I put on weight, it's always legs or arms, bum. Never stomach, just suddenly put that on. And it's like, listen, you need to do something here, because I was just panicking. I sent off for an allergy test, and it came back with, like, basically everything that you should be eating in a clean vegan diet or a healthy vegan diet, I'm, like, seriously intolerant to. So, chickpeas, falafel, beans, soya.
Well, you can't have hummus anymore.
No, I can't have hummus anymore. I was I love my hummus. I'm sorry. That's so upset. I know you're low-key laughing at that.
I am.
Like, certain rices I can't have. But all of these things were, like, builders for a healthy vegan diet. Apples.
That is mad.
That's mad.
It's because you're really not that English.
But do you know
if
what?
If you were English, you'd eat apples. Yeah, you could eat apples.
I'm only 1% British.
1%?
1%.
So it's literally just the passport. It's just the passport.
Everything else is Nordic, Scottish, Irish, Iberian.
Oh, I've got the Iberian.
Romany.
Whatever. Yeah, yeah, we know
Greek,
that.
Sardinian. Yeah. That, all of the white side is just like everywhere except for like, don't so touch England, it's lava.
Nobody in your family ever in history stayed put.
No, basically no. No one stayed put.
In either family.
So yeah, apples, like all of these things that you're supposed to be eating to build a healthy diet, it just wasn't for me, which really, I think it was a final conversation with my gynecologist where I'm like, well, fuck you, I'm getting rid of my gynecologist and fuck this system. I'm not following anyone else's food rules ever again. They have a habit of talking over you. And when I was explaining my issues, he just said, oh, well, you should go plant-based because, you know, most women with endometriosis or PCOS who have gone plant-based have seen improvements. And he wouldn't even let me get the word out to say, like, I've been vegan for 5 years.
I'm literally a vegan.
Literally 5 years. And I was just like, you know what? No, I'm getting rid of this. And I started eating salmon again. And as I started eating salmon, the huge bulk of weight just suddenly then drops down again in time for the wedding. And that was great. But it was really tough because I'd come to this point in my life where it's like, I'm getting a better body image. I'm getting a better sense of self and what I need to nourish and help myself. And then I start getting chronic body pains and suddenly putting on a load of weight from nowhere. Like in the space of like 10 to 18 months, going from a size 10-12 going right up to a 16-18 just from nowhere, just during the veganism.
Babe.
So it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone.
And I think this is the thing. It's like you've spoken a lot about calories. Every time you say that, my partner talks about calories a lot, and I literally drive
you're piss boiling
mad.
A little. Yeah.
It's so much because calories don't mean shit. Like they don't mean shit unless you understand about macronutrients and things like that. Then there's no point even looking at that. What you want to just think about is how you build your plate.
Yeah.
You know, do I have some vegetables on there? Do I have some meat or, you know, protein on there?
Yeah.
Maybe a carbohydrate. Mm. Like that's what you want to think about. And don't be afraid of sugar. Don't be afraid of salt. All these things that society has told us are wrong. Mm. Actually, our body needs all of them, you know, and it's.
But in balance.
In balance. Yeah. You know, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been the journey. Right now, where I'm at, I'm not cutting whole food groups out unless I'm like intolerant to them.
Hi JJ.
I'm not cutting whole food groups out unless like, oh, hello. Oh, he's doing his little
you standing
up thing.
You can't see him on
thing.
The camera right now, but he's begging.
Oh, you're begging.
Love
you
thinks
begging
it's his cute standing up thing, but I know it's him begging for attention, which you do deserve.
He does deserve. Yeah. So these days I'm just a lot more balanced. Unless it's like something that's bad for my physiology, I am plate building instead of calorie building.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm eating when I'm hungry as opposed to like forcing myself to eat at certain points.
Mm.
And yeah, when I can get the raw milk, I'm drinking some of the raw milk to build some of that again.
Where do you get your raw milk from?
Farmer's market.
Oh, for God's sake.
It's so good.
Raw milk, like milk, if any of you lot, because I don't drink, okay, I love cheese, I'm not gonna lie, I love cheese, but I don't drink milk, I don't like milk. I have like oat milk instead, but if I could get raw milk. Raw milk is what you always dreamed milk would taste like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's what it's supposed to taste like. I feel so bad for you now because you're essentially babysitting.
No, he's so sweet.
I wish that you could see it on the camera. Are you just the cutest boy?
Yeah.
You've distracted us. You've become a tangent.
He's become a tangent. He's standing up like a meerkat, guys. Like a meerkat. Such a beautiful boy.
Oh, my lovely. Oh, do you know why? Because it's almost his...
W-A-L-K?
No, that, but also his D-I-N-N-E-R. My dog speaks English properly. I can't say anything around
him.
Yeah,
of course. I can't say anything around my cat. I have to spell things around my cat.
Yeah, man.
Hey, baby. Keep saying what you're saying.
Well, I can't remember what we're saying.
build plate building.
Let's love ourselves as much as we possibly can and not judge ourselves. Yeah, and actually honestly, don't judge other people. Don't go up to someone and say you're too skinny or too fat. Just don't be a bitch.
Yeah,
it's
you
really
don't
awesome.
Know where they
you
are
just
on
don't
their
need
journey.
To say it. Yeah.
Like, I was saying to you earlier, like I've been getting unsolicited advice recently where people will just be like, oh, do you know how you can lose weight? It's like, I didn't mention a thing about weight.
Why are you saying that to me?
It's like, I know where I'm at on my journey, huh? I'm looking after myself. Like, I swim, I jog, I'm doing yoga, I lift weights.
Also, you don't need to prove, you don't even need to list that off. Like, you don't need to prove that to anybody. I think the fact that anyone thinks they have the right to come and mention anything about somebody's appearance or mental state or what they like or whatever, if you just feel like it's your right to come and have an opinion, I'll tell you where that opinion belongs. Exactly. Universal symbol for asshole.
Do you have any more on this subject?
I feel like there's a lot more to talk about, but
I think this could
this
be split into an episode.
JJ!
I think this could be split into an episode two as well. Come here. I think this could be split into an episode two. I think it really could be.
Well, he's really taken over. He hasn't got this involved ever.
He hasn't.
Okay, well, maybe this is as good a time as any. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, this is as good a time as any to end this week's episode of the Afro Animist podcast, because we will be back with a part two.
Yes, for
we
sure.
will be because food is very spiritual. Mm. We still want to do those tips around how to energetically guard your food.
I've got so many tips around that. Like, I've met some amazing people who have had these amazing devices, and even just prayer.
Yeah.
Even just prayer literally does something vibrationally.
Thanking the food for the hands that have brought it to your table, for the people that have dedicated their lives to feeding you. Mm. Thanking the food for all of the animals and insects that have sacrificed themselves so that you may survive, you know?
Exactly.
The universe eating itself on a daily basis, and you are that. Mm. You are
always
that.
Exactly.
Do you know, even the lettuce you're eating, you know,
it screamed when you bit it, that lettuce. Screamed.
There are microbes in the soil, there are insects that have given their lives so that you can live. And their souls matter as much as any other soul, honestly.
100%. I would like to just say one tip before we go, just to leave you with something positive. One thing that I learned from one of my teachers was about how we eat, actually, and about being present with your food. Now, I don't know about everyone else, but I know that as soon as food comes into my mind, then what's on Disney Plus is coming onto my mind. And my concentration is really on something else. Like, it's like I'm not dedicating that space to actually just concentrating on the food. It becomes a different experience when you are present with your food. I mean, like, I'd go to my guru's house and we wouldn't be allowed to talk over dinner. Like, we would just be eating. Like, the whole thing was like the respect and of the food and eating. And then also we're eating with our hands in India, right? Or right hand. And that, I used to always think, like, why would people do that? And now I understand it's about connection. Like, so your body starts understanding about the food. I don't know the right way to say it. Yeah. As soon as you touch
your digestion starts.
So, like,
your fingers.
If you remove the middleman, and I'm not saying you need to go and stop eating. Don't be trying to eat your soup like this. But, like, I'm saying, like, if you know, for me, sometimes when I struggle, really scaling it back and making it really simple and really present is a thing that can help. So, like, one really interesting thing to do is maybe to have a mess around, because we don't eat with our hands at all. When you're a kid, you used to do that and
you get yelled at.
But this middleman, your fork man, that is like disconnecting you from that life that you are giving yourself. So there's something that happens in the body when you touch your food, then your digestive system starts up before it's even in your mouth. So it's this beautiful thing, like, even just to have a couple of mouthfuls of... I might do that today, actually.
And it makes sure
eating soup. We can't do that.
It makes sure it's the right temperature. The body knows what temperature it's going into the body at. It knows the texture. Mm. It starts to receive all of this information before it even goes into your mouth. And it goes into your mouth, the saliva's working it, and then it goes down and it, you know, that digestion starts from the fingertips. It doesn't just start from when it goes into your stomach. So that's a huge, huge part of it. I hope this has helped you. I know this has been a bit of a triggering topic. We all have a relationship to food. And it's a part of being human, a part of the human experience as spiritual light bodies, is learning how to work with this material form of nurturing, not the sort of ethereal emotional form that we get from our caregivers. It's the material form of nurturing. and then we become responsible for that in our adult lives. And that can be a real tricky relationship with us if we weren't given the right foundations. But the foundations are there to be rebuilt at any point. At any point, they're there to be rebuilt. Go within, do your meditation, and find out what that means for you.
Yes. I always want to say amen.
Amen.
Amen, sister. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, sorry, Asha. Okay. So, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, guys.
Yeah. Thank you for being here with the Afro Animus podcast.
Yes, I am Nikki, and
I'm Mark,
and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, beautiful being of the multiverse, for joining us on the Afro Animus podcast.
If you want to get stuck into the conversation or have a question about anything we speak about here, join our mailing list and find us on our socials.
On TikTok and Instagram, find us at the Afro Animist podcast.
On Twitter, you can find us at Afro Animist. If you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple Music, you can also find this talk on YouTube. Just search for us and we will pop up as if by magic.
If you're loving what we're talking about here, share, like, and subscribe. And remember to leave us a thumbs up or 5-star rating on your favourite platform.